It's playoff time in the NBA and NHL. Baseball's in full swing, and FanDuel is your place to bet on every game. Right now, new customers get $150 in bonus bets guaranteed. That's $150, win or lose. Bet on everything from slap shots to home runs to slam dunks, all on an app that is safe, secure, and easy to use. There are some early college football futures that we're eyeing because of the great advice from our Cover 3 guys. What are you waiting for? Visit FanDuel.com/247 and make your first bet an automatic win. FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook.
Must be 21 plus and present in Ohio. First online real money wager only. $10 first deposit required. A bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
This is Chris Fetters of Dogman.com, and I'm here with Scott Eklund. We are post-practice, day 13. This is the final week of spring football, Scott, and really I swear to God, it just started.
And really the last real practice, because yes. Thursday is going to be a walkthrough, basically,
yep.
And then Saturday is the spring preview.
Yep.
So,
yeah, it's crazy. So it's literally, so today was full pads. Like you said, Thursday's going to be light, so we fully expect to just see light bulbs,
shoulder pads. There might not be a lot to report that day.
It may not be anything, but you know, we'll probably still do a
podcast. Talking to the coaches.
Yeah, we'll still do a podcast. Yeah. We talk to the defensive players and coaches after practice today. We'll talk to the offensive players and coaches on Thursday. Still haven't gotten a full word on what the media availability is going to be like on Saturday.
My guess is just going to be DeBoer.
It probably.
Maybe wrapping up spring or whatever.
Yeah, so I'm assuming we'll probably be up in the press box because that's usually where we've done spring ball in the past. But again, some of that's still to be determined, I guess.
Yep.
A little blustery today, not super bad.
Not bad.
A little windy. I think you remarked just in general, it feels like the coldest spring we've had in a while, even though the weather hasn't been really bad.
The weather, we've had 2 days that we had to go inside.
Yeah.
And we had sprinkles maybe a couple other days. It just was cold the whole time. And I mean, maybe it's because, and I'm not tooting my own horn here, but I've lost a little bit of weight, so maybe I'm feeling the cold a little bit more than I did before.
Well, but, you're not exactly bundled up either.
Well, today I'm not. Today I'm not, but I had been. And so, but yeah, it just felt cold the whole time.
Yeah, and so we did the practice, obviously, same kind of practice today, 2 hours, where full pads, so I would imagine they might have done a little bit of scrimmaging, since this, again, will be
probably the last. Well, the officials were here,
probably the last time they'll do it until Saturday, so I'm sure they got some live work in. You know, we did actually get to see some 11-on-11 before we moved inside.
But not real 11-on-11.
Well, it's interesting.
It wasn't full contact or tackle.
No, it wasn't, and we've never really seen it. I think we've, even with Saturday, they didn't have really any live scrimmaging.
It was that one day.
Yeah, we just had the one day where we saw like five plays.
And that was just because they shoot us out maybe a little later than they were supposed
to. Yes, yeah. So, not a lot to talk about in terms of people here. Jen Cohen was here.
Yeah.
You said you saw her on Saturday. I didn't.
Yeah, I I saw her talking to some recruits.
And it makes sense that she would have been here
coaches.
On Saturday.
Yeah.
But today was the first time I'd seen her out there. And then you saw, a 2025 kid out there that looks pretty good on the hoof.
Yeah, very good on the hoof. And it was productive as a freshman last year.
Yeah.
But Teandre Waverly from Kamiak High School, tight end. I guess, yeah. And then he plays at FSP.
Yeah, so I saw him. I saw that Nick Sheridan went over and was talking. I assume his parents were there, a coach, and so he was chatting him up during the warm ups and what have you. So clearly, trying to make early inroads.
But not any. I mean, that we saw. That was the only recruit that we really saw.
I think they've really. I have no idea what they're going
to
do.
I think they're pushing everybody to Saturday.
And it would make sense
if you're coming in this week. Just try and come in Saturday.
And they had a lot of people in this weekend.
Yeah.
You know, obviously they had the coaches' clinic, so you had a lot of players hanging around with their coaches, a lot of recruits. You know, those stories are coming out as well. You talked to a couple guys that have actually just recently gotten offered.
Yeah.
Check out the front page of Dogman.com for that. But generally speaking, we're really starting to scrape the bottom of the barrel in terms of trying to figure out, you know, what kinds of things are compelling now.
Yeah.
That we haven't already talked about two or three times at some point this spring.
I have a compelling one that'll go up tomorrow, but we can kind of touch on it at some point. And no one had talked to Kevin Ryan yet.
Right.
and I talked to him today. So,
yep.
Really, you know, sometimes you get these, you know, if we had interviewed Race Porter, he was a great quote. He was an easy guy to talk to. We knew him also from the high school days.
And he had a lot of stuff going on off the field.
Yeah, so he was easy to talk to, but, you know, Peyton Henry's not the most talkative guy in the world. Some of the other kickers that they've had have not been the most talkative guys in the world. So they're not really necessarily the greatest interviews. Kevin Ryan is a good interview. I enjoyed talking to him. Really nice kid. Now, maybe this won't be news to everybody because you acted like you already knew this. I didn't know he was on scholarship. I thought he walked on here.
I just assumed being a transfer.
Well, I did too, but he was willing to walk on here.
Yeah.
But they had a scholarship for him, and so that's why he took that opportunity.
I'm going to make a flip comment here. I think he got a half a scholarship for each leg.
Maybe.
Because he can kick with either leg.
And that's... I meant to ask him about being the ambidextrous thing, and I forgot to do that. So I apologize to
Scott.
People. I even had it on my list, and I forgot. So anyway, but that'll be coming out tomorrow. Really nice kid, well-spoken, and had his reasons for being here. And also just talked about some of the things that led to him deciding to transfer from Idaho State, where he had a very successful career, to the University of Washington.
And we'll talk in just a few minutes about some of the other players and coaches we talked to after practice today, but I want to jump back into the 11-on-11 stuff. Again, there were some guys that really didn't participate. Jordan Perryman was there, for instance, but didn't really do anything with the first or second team. I saw Henry Bainavalu working with the twos at right guard today. I saw MJ Ale or Ulumulu Ale working with the ones off the bat. And when they were, I don't know if they ran jumbo.
Well, they had Voit Tanufi in there with him and Thule.
Yeah.
But when Tanufi was not in there, it was Ale.
Yeah, and then Kwalpe Hopa worked in there as well.
So he was also with the twos.
And they're rotating. They're obviously rotating guys in. Saw Noah Ngalu with the twos today.
The one that I noticed was Dyson McCutcheon. He was running with the second
team. And Davon Banks. He was a guy that Chuck Morrell... We talked to today, talked pretty highly about Davon Banks and the fact that they didn't expect to get as many turns with him this spring as they have. And I assume that's because Perryman probably hasn't gotten those reps.
Yeah, he and Elijah Jackson, he said EJ's been dinged up as well. So that's the great thing about the one great thing about spring is you're not worried about getting them ready for a game. You can get guys through, move them through, but guys who might be dinged up that you already kind of know what you have in them, you can let them sit and let younger guys get the reps.
So now on the offensive line, these started to resemble more of the two deeps that we kind of saw at the beginning of camp. From left to right, you had Troy Fautanu, Nate Kaleppo, Corey Luciano, Victor Kern, Mateo Mele. Then the twos was Julius Bulow, Guard Memelar, Garen Hatchett, and then Henry Bainavalu was with the twos, and then Roger Rosengarten. Yeah. So that looks fairly up to date. Miles Morrell, we noticed, has a brace on his left leg, left knee.
Yeah.
So didn't look like he was walking.
Freely. I don't think he's a surgery guy.
Don't know.
It didn't look like that, but it could just be like an MCL sprain or a PCL or something like that.
Yeah, I don't want to speculate on it.
Speculation whatsoever.
He had a knee brace on. He didn't look like he was walking super freely. But who knows if that's something that happened that could have happened Saturday for all we know.
Yeah. Although I think he was out. He was one of the guys out.
But so it may be something recent.
It might have been on Friday.
An old injury. It may be something else. But again, no speculation in terms of what the severity is or anything like that. But he was wearing a brace on his left knee. Saw Penix, I think, right away at the beginning. Mm-hmm. But then we also got to see Morris throw with the ones. And we saw Sam Heward throw with the twos. I only saw one completion from Morris to Jalen Polk on the sideline. I think that was about it.
Mm-hmm.
Other than that,
the other ones were sacks.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and this goes to the idea that the coaches have been talking about this, and DeBoer's talked about this, that they will be more aggressive. And I think, generally speaking, the people at Fresno that we talked to said that they are going to be more high profile and more attack oriented, but they are willing to trade that to potentially give things up on the back end.
Mm-hmm.
And so you may see that down the road, but right now we're seeing a lot of aggressiveness up. They're really pressing hard up front.
Yeah, they are, definitely. And one of the sacks, so the two sacks that I noticed, and I we put quotes around the sack. They are not tackling the quarterback. They're barely even touching him. But Cameron Bright was one of them, and Alfonso Tupitalo was the other one that I noticed, at least. And the Cameron Bright one, while it was still a good play on his part, that was completely made by Dominic Hampton, who came in on a delayed rush, blitz, whatever you want to call it, got blocked. But because of the way he was blocked, Morris had to flush out to the right, and Bright was right there for the sack.
And I also saw another time where he got flushed out to the right, but he had, once he had eluded a certain running back, he had a lot. Yeah, but he also did another one where he could have scrambled for probably at least another 10 yards.
Okay.
Because it was wide open in that flat area, and once he eluded the guy that was coming after him. So again, kind of hit and miss. Mm-hmm.
And then the second team didn't do anything.
Yeah.
That I saw. The two running plays were completely bottled up. And then Sam Heward ended up throwing away two or three passes as well.
So. Yeah, and we're starting. This is actually interesting because we've gotten to the final week of spring football, and we're starting to see maybe a little bit more depth on the running back group because Caleb Berry's now starting to run full go. Sam Adams is around. And then obviously you have Aaron Dumas and JV on Sunday that have been doing their thing. One thing I saw that was really interesting, because typically you hear a lot of talking and a lot of guys yelling and stuff with the coaches, but it's usually really positive. They're trying to get them in the right place, but they're trying to, like, they're pushing guys along. They're doing this thing, but it's all done typically with some positive reinforcement. I saw one where Ryan Grubb was watching Caleb Berry run a route. And he caught the ball, and Grubb just erupted. He had one of those little bags with him, and he just tossed the bag down on the ground and just flipped out a little bit. To me, that's like the most negative reaction I've seen out of a coach, any of the coaches, so far this spring. And so they may still have a little clap back to him if you don't do something
from
right.
From what you saw, what was it?
I couldn't tell. I think it was a wrong route. I think it was a wrong route. Or something
or
in the drill.
Maybe he missed the block.
There was something maybe in the drill that he was supposed to do that he just maybe completely avoided or just spaced it. But yeah, Grubb kind of
he kind of
undressed him a little bit. Not bad, but just what it was. I noticed it out of the corner of my eye because it was such a reaction that just typically this spring you have not seen at all.
Yeah,
because typically like on off, especially the offensive guys. Jamarcus Shepherd is the one that leads the way in terms of just being vocal. You hear him everywhere on the field. Mm-hmm. He's just constant. But he's not yelling at guys. I mean, he's yelling at guys, but he's yelling at them to try to get something specifically mm-hmm. done. But he's doing positive. He's just trying to hammer on them. Do this, do this, do this. He's not getting on them, really, negatively. Mm-hmm. The reaction by Grubb was that there was no ambiguity about that. Barry screwed up somehow.
Happy.
And the funny part about it is it looked like the most innocuous little drill in the world. Like, what could he have possibly done wrong? But again, it goes to the details. These guys are so hammered in on the details.
Sometimes it's a depth thing for a route. Because if you run at the wrong depth, that allows the defender to come over and make a play.
I definitely get the sense it was a route because he caught the ball. Yeah. I don't know the details of it. But I think it was the details that got grubbed, unglued.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
You know, so again, you know, we're seeing the when we see him play trips, you see, you know, Giles Jackson in a slot, you see Rome Odunze, you see Jalen Polk getting a lot of turns. You know, Jalen McMillan is there, but he's not really doing anything. So it's, who knows, he's kind of maybe in the Jordan Perryman group right now. They're just trying to treat him with kid gloves and see if maybe they can do some things on Saturday, but we'll see.
Yeah, I have a feeling you're probably not going to see quite a few guys out there running around. The one thing that I will say is that the sense I got from DeBoer when he was talking earlier, what was it? I don't think it was Friday. Maybe it was Friday where DeBoer was asked if they were going to have a full game, and he said, yeah, just with the numbers. Maybe it was two Fridays ago.
Yeah.
They're not going to be able to do it. But yeah, I think eventually they'd like to get to the point where they could do that. The thing is, I thought with the amount of numbers that they have on the roster right now, because of the sixth year of eligibility for all those guys who are enrolled either...
Who were here at 2020.
Who are either, on the roster in 2020.
Yeah.
All those guys can play another year. And, you know, some of those guys might have been graduates by now. So that's why I thought there would be enough numbers. Because usually in the spring, Chris, you've been doing this longer than I've been doing it, and I've been doing it 18 years. And
thanks for that, by the way.
Well, not that much longer than me, but still, you just... I didn't start doing it until I was in my 30s, so... But anyway, some springs, they only have, like, 50 scholarship guys
right.
on the roster.
That's
because
right.
there might be 25 guys showing up. This is back in the day. Now you have so many guys enrolling early, you don't quite have that. But there were times before the early enrollment thing was, like, the thing, and there would be, like, 50 guys
there's,
on the field.
There's no question that numbers are higher.
Much higher
and
now.
It's a result of that as well as people enrolling yeah. early, mm-hmm. doing that kind of thing. The numbers are yeah. higher than they've ever been before.
Yeah.
That said, it's still incredibly difficult. Like, if you look at their middle linebacker group right now.
Mm-hmm. Or the running backs.
You're only looking at four or five guys.
Yeah.
Yes. But at least with running backs, you could have one guy there, and just go and just
yeah.
animal and
yeah.
and yes that but the running backs is definitely a fine point and a big reason why they can't do it, but like I said, the linebacker core right now is very difficult,
and the defensive back group
yeah.
right now, I mean,
like Cameron Williams didn't
yeah.
really do anything in the two deeps that I no. saw. The Mikel Esteen, Mikel Esteen was in there. So
with Irvin,
and so, but does that mean he's out for Saturday? Does that mean they're just treating? Does that mean they just gave him a little bit of a break because
mm-hmm.
he was there? He absolutely was there. So again, it's so hard to
yeah.
read into why certain guys are playing and other guys yeah. aren't. It's so all we can do is report what we saw,
mm-hmm.
but we can't necessarily.
Give you
come
context.
To a reasonable inference
yeah.
as to why.
Or a context
yeah.
on why. So, yeah.
Exactly.
But, I mean, the thing is, you know, and people, you know, we're giving you what we see, and there's certain things that we can't talk about that we see. But, you know, I, from everything that I've seen in the 13 practices, it looks like they're getting a lot done. It looks like the players have really surprised the coaches with how quickly they pick some things up. That, I mean, Ryan Grubb has said, he really likes where they're at in a lot of places. Chuck Morrell today said that the team was ahead of things.
Yeah, I thought that was really telling.
Yeah, and then
you don't see a lot of coaches talking that way.
He said, "We're actually further ahead than I thought we'd
yeah.
be." So,
and he actually named guys
yeah.
when you asked specifically who were maybe more ahead than you thought they might be at coming
yeah.
into this thing.
Yeah. So, and people don't need to listen to that or not listen. Well. I'm not going to post a listenable thing, but I'll post the quotes.
I have some video of it.
Yeah, but I'll post the quotes too.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think people there's some quiet confidence from this staff that they're excited about where this team is at right now.
CBS Wednesday.
We have so many cool, diverse people from different backgrounds, different beliefs, different upbringings, and it just keeps growing.
I'm a citizen of the United States.
I'm a hustler.
I'm a big Taylor Swift fan.
I'm the queen of the tribe.
I am playing whatever role I gotta play.
I'm gonna play this game full speed.
I ain't going down like no punk.
A new Survivor, Wednesday on CBS and streaming on Paramount Plus.
What's really gonna be telling is Sunday. Sunday is gonna be a big day for us.
Well, yeah, go explain
yeah,
that.
So the Huskies spring game is on Saturday, and we could start seeing stuff leak out on Saturday, but Sunday is...
Well, I think we're going to see things leaking out well before that.
You think? Okay.
Yeah,
well, I think it'll be after the spring game. I think you could see it 20 minutes after the spring game, but basically, if a player wants to play football this fall, and if they want to play basketball, that obviously we're not talking about that right now, but the fall
we
and
will.
Winter sports, the portal guys have to be in the portal by the 1st of May. If they don't get in by the 1st of May, they are not playing this fall unless something... They have to go appeal to the NCAA, and you can see with Jackson Kirkland how long that is taking to figure out how if he's going to be eligible this fall. So we still have no word on that. But
yeah.
So these guys need to put their names in. So we've said it before on the podcast, you and I. If they're going to transfer, they've been thinking about this whole month, basically. This isn't a spur-of-the-moment thing.
Yeah.
I don't think this is a spur.
If not longer.
Yeah, and I'm sure they're having meetings with coaches. I'm sure they're like, hey, where do I stand? And is this something that I'm going to regret staying for? Or am I going to have the opportunity to play? Am I going to have the opportunity to start? Where does things stand? We've heard of some big names who could be leaving. I mean, we don't know. And the thing is, guys could put their name in the portal, but they're not sure they want to be in the portal. but they know they have to do it by the first, and then you have a conversation with the coaches after that. I put my name in the portal just because I needed to make sure I had a spot, but I also want to talk to you. I want to know, is this a place that I should stay?
And I think people need to understand, especially in light of the Monday news with Emmett Matthews going into the portal, with the idea that he could still withdraw his name at any time. Yep. The portal is not, it's not Hotel California, folks. You can come out anytime you want.
Yeah.
But that's set, because we saw it again with Colson Yankoff and Jacob Sermon. When they both went in the portal, Yankoff went to UCLA and Sermon withdrew his name 24, 48 hours after he did it. So these things are so fluid, but I think we just need to kind of seed the ground for fans to understand. Don't be surprised when you see names go in the portal. I understand the initial gut reaction is going to be like, man, that blows. Oh, why did he do that? That was dumb. Blah, blah. Everyone's going to have their gut reaction. I totally get it. People are going to vent. People are going to do it. But just remember the underlying idea that because they put their name in the portal doesn't mean they're gone. It means they're thinking about going, without a doubt.
And it isn't like Washington is ending their practice and then they have 2 weeks to decide.
Right.
They have to decide the next day.
That's where Washington needs to be one of the teams out there, and especially the West Coast teams or the Northern teams that usually typically have their springs later because of weather. This is ridiculous. How do you give people less than 24 hours to make a decision that could be as impactful as that? Now, granted, I don't want to double speak because we have been talking about these decisions could be longer time in coming. But that said, you literally have less than 24 hours from your spring game to make that choice, like physically. Yeah. Like you have to literally put the information in. It doesn't make any sense because you're giving basically all the Southern teams at least weeks, if not a month or two, notice that they can do whatever they want because they're going to have all the time in the world, those kids down there, to make their minds up, and all the people up north or maybe in the Northwest or wherever, because, you know, even Oregon's only doing their spring game a week ahead of Washington's.
It was this last week.
Yeah, so it's not like they're getting a hell of a lot more time, but if you go to USC, if you go to Arizona State, those guys have had spring football. They had it well before that.
Yeah.
You know, that they get a distinct advantage.
Yeah. I've heard up to 10 guys.
Yeah,
could put their name in, and then there's other people that are hearing more than that. There's other people that's not even going to be close to that.
And it's already started. Kaysen Kitchen's in the portal. Mekhi Pei's in the portal.
Those are two walk-ons.
They're both walk-on defensive backs. But again, when we say that these, you know, that it could be very, very busy during spring game on this stuff, it's already starting to happen, and that's why I believe I wouldn't be surprised. Now, granted, the players themselves may not make it public via like their social networking and stuff. It would not surprise me if word leaks out on at least two or three players before spring game even happens.
Yeah.
Because there are going to be some names out there where I just don't think the information on those particular players is going to be able to be kept secret.
Yeah.
I just don't see it happening. It's either they're too high profile or people just blab and the word gets out. You know what I mean? There's just too many different ways with social networking now for that not to be kept secret on all of them, right? Maybe a lot of them, but definitely not all of them. So that will be something really, really interesting to watch. Going back to some of the post-practice stuff before we move to hoops, because we will have a little bit of a discussion on the hoop stuff for sure. You talked to Chuck Morrell. We talked a little bit about that. I thought he had some really good stuff on that. I wanted to talk to some vets. So I talked to Alex Cook. I talked to Braylon Trice kind of to get their sense of how they're getting the impressions of the offensive guys they go up against. Because we've talked all spring to them about the defensive changes. And they've been pretty adamant. The changes are a lot more significant than maybe you think. Because you think, oh, they're playing a nickel-based defense, but they're, you know, instead of a true nickel, they're playing this husky position. So it's, you know, maybe the body types are a little different, but similarly, it's a 4-2-5 type scheme. And so maybe how different could it reasonably be? Everyone we talked to has been like, it's way different.
Yeah.
It's like we get a lot more ownership of the position. We have a lot more, it's on our plates in terms of what we can and can't do. We have to really be on it, that kind of thing. More aggressive, all that kind of stuff. But I wanted to get a sense of, like, you know, Braylon Trice, what's it been like going up against, like, the tackles?
Mm-hmm.
Or Alex Cook, what has it been like going up against the receivers? You know who the first person that Alex Cook talked about? You will never guess it.
Oh. Nick Duran?
Yes.
I gave it away when I said that. But he's had a great camp.
I told him. I said he had a great Saturday. He's like, he did, didn't he? He had a great Saturday.
He had a long touchdown from Dylan Morris when we were inside that one day.
Yeah.
I
shouldn't have given it away. Yeah. You would never have guessed.
I was going to say like Junior Alexander.
Yeah, you would never
like
have guessed it if I hadn't given it away.
Yeah.
So anyways, I thought that was kind of cool. And then, you know, like Braylon Trice talked about Troy Fautanu, Roger Rosengarten as being guys that he thinks is really new lease on life is a bad way to describe it, but they've been re-energized, refreshed. The culture change, I think, has really done them a lot of good. And then obviously with Jackson Kirkland not being here yet, that's given Fautanu basically a whole spring to really have that left tackle position be his own. And, you know, Trice tells me, you know, he's like, that guy's a player. He's a flat-out player.
Yeah.
Everyone loves him.
83-inch arms.
Yeah, everyone loves him. So, you know, that was interesting. And then, again, you kind of mentioned Kevin Ryan as a guy that you talked to, and you're going to have some good stuff from him.
Yeah.
Anybody else that we spoke to?
I think Jack got DeMario King.
Okay, yeah.
I didn't ask him what DeMario said, but so we got DeMario King, we got Braylon Trice, we got Alex Cook, we got Chuck Morrell, and we got Kevin Ryan. So that's five good interviews right there.
Yeah, and there might be one other. I have to go back and look and see what Jack said.
I think Kevin Ryan was the last transfer. I mean, DeMario King was kind of a transfer because he was a JUCO kid, but Kevin Ryan's the last true transfer that we hadn't talked to yet this spring. So good to get his perspective. And like I said, you know, these specialists get so overlooked. Part of it's overlooked because we can get a specialist anytime we want. We can get them either day.
Yeah.
They said, hey, the specialists are open whenever you want to talk to them. And no one asked. And so I was like, well, I want to talk to Kevin Ryan. I never talked to him during the recruiting process. You know, because he only had like a couple weeks where he was in it. And so pay attention to it. He's a good kid. And I think you guys are going to be pleasantly surprised by what he had to say.
Yeah. And he walks up to you, and he's like really friendly and all stuff.
Oh,
but he's
short.
He looks like your chemistry partner.
Yeah,
he's got glasses and everything. He does. He's like the antithesis of a football player.
He took him off for the picture I took of him.
That's
good. Because we didn't have a picture of it, so I didn't want to post something else.
Yeah.
So
and trust me, Kevin, I don't know if you're listening. Yeah. This is not a slight on you, dude.
No.
None of us look like football
players. But he does not. I mean, I'm going way in the weeds here, but you remember Sean Tarantola, right?
Yep.
And great football coach.
Yeah.
But I remember saying to you
about five feet tall.
Yeah. And I said, if you lined up 100 coaches, he would be the last one you were picking as a successful head coach.
I would say that there was a better chance of me ending up next to him at a Grateful Dead concert compared to on the sideline of a high school football game.
And he's successful.
Oh, he's great.
Tarantola's
a phenomenal
coach.
High school coach.
And so, we loved working with him. He was at Evergreen down in Burien.
But I could say the same thing about Coach Ross at Sumner, too. I mean, he's with the hair and all.
No,
that.
But he's a wild man.
I get that. But you could see him. I would assume I'd see him maybe on a season of Deadliest Catch as opposed to being on the sideline.
But
you know.
Well, the problem for me is I played football with Keith Ross, so
I know.
But yeah, I mean, Sean Tarantola was just the most unassuming kid you would ever think. You know what? Another guy, Dave Miller, is another one who's very unassuming. The only reason I knew he's a head coach is because I met him and I knew he was a head coach.
Yeah.
But if I walked up to him, you would never think he was the head coach.
But again, you know, to me, I see a lot of similarities between Coach Miller and Coach Pete.
Yeah.
Very understated.
Yeah.
Very, you know, there's nothing that you would think on initial inspection that goes, oh, yeah, that guy's like a Hall of Fame type coach.
Well, you remember Chris Strouser.
Yeah.
You would never think he was a
offensive line
coach. Maybe a receivers coach.
Well, and the same thing with Coach Mirabal at Oregon, the offensive line coach.
He's skinny.
Him and Strouser are like
same size,
same guys. It's like, you gotta be kidding me.
Yeah.
You're working with Redwoods.
And I know you never played that position. So,
yeah.
You know.
Oh, it's crazy. Absolutely nuts. So getting off on the tangent there, but so we did all those interviews. That should be stuff that people should check out. Let's dump before we finish out.
Yeah.
Let's do catch up a little bit on the basketball news because that I should have probably prefaced it at the beginning. I apologize. Big news.
What do you think people want to know first, recruiting or the transfer?
What do you mean?
What do you think people? What's our lead for the basketball side of things here right now?
Oh, it's always going to be people coming in because I think to be honest with you, I think people are always more enamored with the shiny toy in the corner that they that they're oh that guy
a new guy yeah
new guy as, you know, and then they always want to know why guys left.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you explain it to them, sometimes they get it, sometimes it doesn't make sense. And in this particular case, Emmett Matthews, he hasn't announced anything, but it we got it confirmed because we have our sources within 24/7 CBS and all that. They have their finger on the pulse of the portal for both football and basketball. They were confirmed. They confirmed that Emmett Matthews, his name, is in the transfer portal.
But he could be a person who decides to pull it back out.
And all, and obviously we made our calls right after we figured this out. And every call that we've made and every person that we've talked to, it seems overwhelming that they think he's coming back.
Mm-hmm.
Now, does that mean in a matter of hours, days, weeks?
Change, yeah.
Who knows? Yeah. No idea. I think the biggest thing right now is just coming to grips with the idea of what led to the decision. Why did it happen?
Yeah.
And that's the hardest one because there's not a lot of dots that we can connect here that make a lot of sense. We know that there was a bunch of credits that were supposed to come from West Virginia to Washington that did not transfer. So there may be a school-related thing that he's got to think about, and that you know, that may be something that Washington just can't do or can't handle. So that's one thing to think about. Although my opinion on that is that if you'd really factored in the school part of it, you would have wanted to make sure you were going to a place where you knew you were covered academically, instead of just coming home with the idea that your academics could be 50-50. You know, but you've spent a whole year here. You've kind of invested in it. So that's where that doesn't make a ton of sense to me on the outside looking in. But then also when you factor in, you know, you still have a lot of news on the outside. They're still waiting on all these big guys, whether you're talking about Fardaz, AMAC, you're talking about Frank Kepnang, you're talking about Isaiah Cottrell. I think Cottrell just took a visit to UNLV. Fardaz is on a visit to Texas Tech, I believe, right now. Kepnang, they're waiting on a decision on him because he just took a visit. So we're trying to figure out.
And we feel good about where things stand with Kepnang.
Yeah, they obviously everything, you know, they just put out their presentation. Everything's nice and shiny and new. I'm sure he came away feeling great about it. But until he literally comes out and says what he's doing, you know, there's nothing to really talk about.
Yeah. And
but we want to try to reach him.
Yeah, if we were doing crystal, if somebody said you have to put in a crystal ball for Frank Kepnang, we're all probably putting it in for UW, but not a high confidence level.
Yeah, I think, you know, what was the, we were talking about earlier with Christian Pierce and Greg Biggins putting in a six.
Yeah.
So it's an educated guess. He feels good about it. It's a gut feel. He's been doing this a long time. So you put some stock into that. That's probably the same way we would feel about Kepnang to Washington. We feel good about it. Educated guess. Makes sense for a number of reasons. But until
it actually happens.
Yes, until it actually happens, you don't know.
Yeah.
And you always are all kind of on alert, waiting for that to happen. So there's that going on. But now the thing with Emmett Matthews really kind of puts a wrinkle in it because you don't know. First of all, you don't know how long it's going to take for him to figure out whether he wants to go somewhere or whether he wants to come back. You got to wonder who's in his ear. I don't think his parents would be involved in this. It doesn't make sense end.
They're from here.
It's just, again, it's a very unusual situation, very fluid.
Yeah.
So we have to figure out what happens
there. I think
there
was some outside influences that got him to do it.
And again, educated guess, you'd have to think that there's something going on there. Someone's in his ear. Someone's telling him something about something. Who knows?
But because he's a leader on this team.
And that's the thing. He was not only going to be one of the bigger returners coming back, but he was expected to be one of those guys that was really going to step up.
Yeah.
You know, he averaged almost 12 points a game, 4.5 rebounds. That's not very easily done in terms of trying to bring that back in production. You can't just... There's thousands of guys in the portal, but how many of those guys are going to be able to do that right from the jump at that level?
Uh-huh.
It's not easy to do. It's not easy to find. So that's another piece of the puzzle. But if they can get some of these other pieces sorted out with their bigs, if they can get, you know, the stuff with Kepnang sorted out, if they can get AMAC to come to Washington or Cottrell to come to Washington, if they can get some of these other pieces in place, maybe that starts to fill the picture out for Matthews and he starts to maybe see things from a little different perspective, and maybe that helps. You know, it's just, again, very fluid, very unusual. We're trying to keep people on top of it as much as possible, but there's really only so much we can share. A lot of it is stuff that's, we hear it, and we may believe it, but we can't substantiate it. We can't confirm it with another source. So those are the types of things we can't tell people.
And we're not going to burn people that, you know, if we know what is going to happen.
Right.
We've got something ready to go, but we're going to let kids have their moment.
Absolutely.
And do their
We've never changed that policy.
We call him kid. I mean, he's, what, 21?
Yeah. We've never changed that policy. Now, obviously, we didn't wait for Emmett Matthews to make an announcement before declaring he's in the portal.
Yeah.
But we knew it was there. So we ran with that because we knew it. It was done.
Uh-huh.
So we can't wait forever on guys.
Well, and if we know it, then other people know it.
Well, sure. Yeah.
I mean, it isn't like it's 24/7's portal.
Right.
And we're the only ones. Everybody knows
exactly
who's in the portal.
Exactly. So we'll wrap that up there unless there's another angle to this that you want to talk about.
No, not really. I'm really getting bummed about kids being influenced when they're already on a team and already in a place, and then outside influences are. But, I mean, that's always happened, I guess.
But here's an interesting angle on this, though, and I think this is important to consider. I'm glad you brought this up. Right now, there's really no consequences for going into the portal.
Yeah.
Right? So if there's no consequences for going to the portal, it's like the one time when you can dip your toe in the water.
Yeah.
Like if you want to get an NBA NBA draft grade or an NFL draft grade, you can put your name out there and you can withdraw it you know, before a certain time, and there's literally no penalty. The only penalty you might accrue would be maybe with your coaches and players if they get pissed off at you for, you know, why are you doing this? I don't understand. I thought you were with us. Why are you doing that? Why are you doing this lone wolf routine?
Yeah.
So, you know, do Emmett Matthews, do his teammates think that he's just doing this lone wolf routine, or are they sitting there going, you know what, if I was in Emmett Matthews' shoes, I'd be doing the exact same thing.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's a really important point to consider, because right now, if there are no ramifications for a guy like Emmett Matthews going in the portal to maybe pursue an NIL opportunity or to pursue an opportunity that just came up literally yesterday because player X left such and such a situation and it's too good an opportunity to pass up and they want him, who's going to say he's wrong?
Yeah.
My only issue with this particular situation with Matthews is I'm trying to figure out where he's going to find the eligibility.
Yeah.
Because he already used up his one freebie by coming from West Virginia to Washington. He would obviously have to petition to get the final year because he already played 4 years, or this would be his fifth year. I don't know. There's a lot of pieces. There's a lot of moving parts to this picture.
Yeah, it's just kind of a bummer, but you know, because I think he's a leader. I don't even the 12-4 or 4.5, whatever it was.
Yeah,
I don't. It wasn't necessarily that he was going to be a leader scoring wise, although that's helpful. I was more of the emotional leader of this team.
Yeah,
and because Terrell Brown was the heart and soul of this team last year.
Yeah,
but Emmett Matthews was right there.
Yep.
And with his tough, tenacious defense that he likes to play, with his length, and with his, I think it's more, he has a more gregarious personality. I think he's a guy that could really benefit this team. I think the Huskies could be good next year.
Well, the thing is, he embodied kind of that hometown mentality as much as anybody.
Exactly.
And he literally came the furthest to do it, coming from West Virginia.
Yeah.
Coming back and doing it. And that's what made it all the more unusual, especially the timing of it, because you know I'm sure the coaches are telling those guys, "Look, we're rounding the horses up together. We're getting everyone together here. We're putting this thing together for a big run." And now all of a sudden this happens. You know, on the surface, it doesn't look great.
No, it doesn't.
So
it doesn't. So
all right. So final football thoughts before we wrap it up.
Final football thoughts. I mean, it's kind of what we've seen. It's Groundhog Day, as Kim likes to call it, you know, where we see the same thing all the time. But, you know, some good comments from Coach Morrell, like hearing that the defense is ahead of itself or where he thought it would be. Like hearing about Grubb getting on guys for not running the right depth or whatever it is that he was upset about. I like hearing that they're really focused on the details of things.
Yeah.
And, Thursday's going to be kind of low-key, but we're going to get to interview the
offensive guys.
And Saturday is going to be when you guys get the chance to see what we see all the time. And maybe you'll get to see it online. Maybe you'll see it in the stadium. Hopefully, they'll have a good bunch, because I've gotten several recruits texting me saying, hey, I'm going to be up there. One guy was last night was Devin Bryan. He's a linebacker out of St. John Bosco.
Yeah.
High three-star guy. Sounds like he ran an 8, so he's up to 220 pounds and ran an 11-1, 100 meters.
Wow.
So, I mean, that's flying at that size. So, you know, lots of things to consider about. If you guys have the chance to go to this game, it's a way for you to show recruits that the fan base is behind the team. I know it's probably going to fall on deaf ears for most people because a lot of people have stuff going on Saturdays, especially my kids. I've got T-ball, I've got coach pitch, got all the stuff that's going on, and I totally get it. But if you guys can figure out a way to be down here 11-1, you can show these recruits that are going to be on campus that Washington supports the football program.
Yeah, no, I think it's great, and obviously I'll be very, very curious to see how much of the spring preview kind of resembles what we just saw on Saturday. In terms of, mm-hmm. will they still be filling in a lot of special teams work and practice, mm-hmm. or will they actually be running, you know, cover and return type scenarios? You know, will they actually do a kickoff scenario?
Yeah.
You know, these are all things that obviously with a first-year staff, we're very curious to find out exactly how much of actual football will they try to run, even if they don't necessarily go full tackle, live, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
I think will be very telling. I want to go back real quick to the comments that Coach Morrell made. I'm kind of stunned. I was really kind of stunned when he said it because he did it in front of us.
Mm-hmm.
I when's the last time you ever talked to a coach in spring who said that they were actually further ahead?
I don't know if I've ever heard that.
Yeah. I mean, it really was very kind of stunning. And
maybe it's because he didn't know what to expect because he didn't know any of these guys. He didn't know what he had.
Yeah.
And now he's like, oh, they're further along than I thought they were going to be. I thought we'd be working on other things.
And that always makes me wonder, are we talking about a staff here that's dealing with things at a low floor, low ceiling scenario?
Yeah.
Or what, you know, if the expectations weren't great to start with, was that simply a way for them to kind of buffer things so they wouldn't be setting themselves up for potentially failure or setting themselves up for a situation that maybe would alter their way of thinking? I really don't know.
Yeah.
But it really came across as so interesting to me.
Yeah.
Because again, I can't remember the last time a coach literally offered up the idea, oh yeah, we're actually doing better than I thought we would.
Yeah.
Because most coaches, like, especially Peterson. They would never say that really, but they would, like Peterson would always have the conundrum. I like both sides. So if one side's doing well, that means the other side's sucking. And if they do well, that means that side sucked. And it's like, you don't ever really hear, you know, like, but obviously Morrell didn't say, yeah, I think we're way ahead, which means I think the offense is really kind of blowing right now.
Yeah.
You know, he didn't go that far, obviously. Yeah. But it was really interesting to hear him kind of offer that.
Yeah.
Not so much unsolicited, but he went a hell of a lot further with that answer than I fully expected.
The pat answer of, well, there's a few things that we're doing good. There's a lot of things we're not. Still got 3 practices.
Yeah, lots to clean up.
Yeah. A lot of things. He never said that.
Yeah, that was crazy to me.
Yeah.
All right, well, let's wrap it up because, you know, again, I think we really are kind of milking the...
yeah.
We're milking this thing for all it's worth.
Yeah, trying squeezing to get water out of a rock.
Right, we are literally at the 0.2 of the marathon.
Yeah.
We've gone the 26 miles. We're literally the 0.2. We can see the finish line in sight, and we're on our knees. We're crawling towards the finish line. So we'll wrap it up now. Really appreciate you guys for sticking around with us. Also, do want to remember, again, if you are not on our daily newsletter and our digest, get on it. Send an email to huskystadium@gmail.com. Again, huskystadium@gmail.com. Subject line, newsletter. That's all you have to do. Send an email to us. We'll put you on the list, and we'll send you out our daily digest. Usually it's a once or twice a day. Sometimes with some breaking news, we'll do it more often. But it'll give you a rundown of all the top stories that we've put out of the day. So definitely take care of that. So we're done. That's it. So for Scott Acklin, this is Chris Fetters of Dogman.com. Go Dogs.
Hello, everyone. It's Mike Richards here. You might have seen me on CBS working on their Champions League coverage over the last couple of years. I wanted to tell you about an exciting new podcast that I've been working on. It's called The Rest Is Football. It's me, alongside Gary Lineker and Alan Shearer, two absolute legends of the game. The show combines topical debate from the world of soccer along with outrageous tales from our careers. And I mean outrageous. Just search The Rest Is Football wherever you get your podcasts. All the best from Big Meats.